You better look right at yourself.
WSLR-LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV-LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. I'm Stephanie Coachman with your WSLR news for Wednesday, July 15th. A startup business is taking hurricane evacuations to the next level at a cost. If you worry about getting stuck on the highway or being gouged by last-minute commercial flights, Priority Evac, that's the name of the company, puts you ahead of all lines and into a private jet to Atlanta, out of Sarasota, Bradenton, Southwest Florida International and Fort Myers, or Tampa International Airport. For $1,250 a year per person, the annual pass is good for two separate storms in one season. Pets can come for an additional $125. When a tropical storm or hurricane warning is triggered for the region, the company starts scheduling flights and lets each member know what time theirs leaves. If a storm doesn't happen in a season, Priority Evac keeps the $1,250 fee. If this is not within your financial reach, public hurricane shelters are sturdy, safe, meals are provided, and your fellow humans usually show their best side. And most of the shelters now accept pets too. As local government budgets are squeezed by storm repairs and possible property tax cuts, county leaders are weighing how to keep up with the everyday demands of a region that has yet to catch up with recent fast growth. Sarasota County Commissioner Tom Knight is calling for a fresh look at how future infrastructure dollars are spent. Knight wants the county to place greater emphasis on transportation projects as commissioners review the next round of surface-funded investment. He argues that improving roads, intersections, and mobility should take precedence as traffic continues to challenge residents across the county. The discussion comes as county leaders evaluate which projects will deliver the greatest long-term benefit. Warming waters and disease are damaging coral reefs along Florida's coastline, but Sarasota-based scientists seem to have found one partial solution. Researchers at Moat Marine Laboratory have identified coral that appears naturally resistant to stony coral tissue loss disease, the fast-spreading infection responsible for widespread coral loss along Florida's coral reef. Scientists say the discovery could strengthen restoration efforts by allowing more resilient coral to be cultivated and replanted, improving the reef's ability to recover from years of disease and environmental stress. Until next time, I'm Stephanie Coachman, and that's your WSLR News. Stay informed, stay grounded, and stay engaged.
Good morning. Welcome to the Peace and Justice Report right here on your own community radio station, WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Bradenton, and 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, WBPV. And let me check something out, make sure we're going over the air here. I believe we are. We're just going to fool around here with the microphones. Actually, I have a guest in the studio, and I should mention that the opinions you hear today are strictly those of the host and the guest and do not necessarily reflect those of the management team, the board of directors, or any of the volunteers affiliated with the station. And, of course, my name is Bob Connors. I can be heard every other Wednesday. Tom Walker and I alternate weeks on the Peace and Justice Report, so Tom will be back next week. And what I'm going to do is have my guest, who walked into the studio a little bit ago, tell us a little bit about himself. His name is Nick Perez, and I met him a few weeks ago, and I was impressed by the new nonprofit that he has began working with, that he created, actually. You know, Nick, I'm going to give you my microphone while I adjust the other one, so that but I'm going to turn this over to you. Take the microphone, tell us a little bit about yourself and about your new nonprofit.
Well, thank you for having me here, Bob. My name is Nick Perez, as you said, and I am a Sarasota native and a Navy veteran. I was in the Navy for 15 years as a corpsman, which is a medic for anyone that doesn't know that. And through the course of my Navy career, just like a lot of veterans out there, I amassed different injuries, both mental and physical. And when I got out of the Navy, different body parts in pain, different depression, anxiety, PTSD that I was all working through, along with losing that military structure. And one book that inspired me to want to become a therapist was The Body Keeps the Score. And what I loved about that book was that he talked about how in all his years in psychiatry, that he learned that it was actually these body-based modalities that help people recover from PTSD faster than just talk therapy and medication alone. So that's what I wanted to do. Little did I know that I would be walking myself through that exact process. So I'd stopped taking meds. I stopped drinking. Every time the VA said, you need to go to surgery, I went to a Chinese medicine doctor instead to deal with the pain and change my diet to reduce inflammation. Sat with ayahuasca in Peru through a veteran organization called the Heroic Heart Project. Did craniosacral therapy, alignment-based yoga, meditation, all these things combined, along with very intense transformation coaching, forgiveness work, mental reframing, all these different things, allowed my body slowly to become more pain-free and allowed me to handle stress. Even most recently, going through a grieving process, my ability to move through that was a lot faster. So as most ideas come to me in meditation, the idea of run and relief came to me as a way to increase education and access to these types of modalities for veterans so that they could also experience the same healing that I did.
So tell us how you did become a veteran. You said you're in the Navy for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you happen to join the Navy? Right out of high school?
Right out of high school. I actually had a couple of college offers. I was a competitive swimmer back then. And I ended up just saying to myself, I don't want to go to college. I want to go run and shoot some things instead. I originally signed up with the SEAL contract, and when that didn't work out, I knew that corpsmen go with Marines as their combat medics, so that's why I went the route of corpsmen. A lot of people ask me why I didn't do 15 or why I did 15 years instead of 20, and there was multiple reasons. For me, my body and mind just wasn't having it anymore. A big factor was my kids. I felt like they really needed me to be present where they were versus where...
Where were you stationed?
I was in California at the time I got out, and my kids were here in Sarasota.
So of your 15 years, were you stationed in California most of that time?
Yes, 6 years in California, both Camp Pendleton and the Naval Hospital in San Clemente Island, and also Camp Lejeune. Also, Charleston, Spain was my first duty station, which was great for a brand new 19-year-old with the most money he's ever had in his life. I really enjoyed everywhere I got to go. And deployed 4 times, one to Afghanistan, then to Japan. Then I did a ship tour with Marines. So we went to Africa, Indonesia, all over the Middle East. And then my final deployment was at the United Arab Emirates. And it was there that I actually made the decision. I said, I'm going to be complete with before my 20 years.
So what were your duties? Did they change over time, or did you have one specific job most of the time you were in the Navy?
As a corpsman, we're kind of like the jack of all trades in the medical field. I could be tasked to be a combat medic and go on patrol. I could be in the clinic doing a physical exam. Once I went through an advanced training program to be called what's known as an independent duty corpsman, I could actually prescribe the medications myself and act as an independent provider. But the duties, it really is just whatever is needed at the time. So I could be walking around with a gun, or I could be in the back doing exams.
And you said you were in Afghanistan for mm-hmm. a little bit?
Yeah, 2011.
And what were you doing there? What was your job there?
I was the main medic with a squad of Marines. So we were tasked. It was a combat deployment with infantry, and we were tasked with keeping the Taliban at bay and all that.
So how was that experience compared to all your other Navy experiences?
Yeah.
Being in
Well, you know, there's... It's like if you ever have someone who's not a parent ask what's it like to be a parent, there's only one, it's not really any way you can truly convey it. It's a side of life that you have to experience. And I feel like combat is the same way. Is we can watch it on TV. People can say that they're engaging their warrior spirit, but the actual experience of someone shooting at you, you shooting back at them, or an IED goes off nearby, it's very surreal. Like someone's trying to kill me and I'm trying to kill them. And also I'm the medic. So if one of my guys goes down, I take care of them. And if we capture someone and we injured them, I take care of them too. So it's a very surreal experience. Very rugged living, like in the middle of a tent on the desert, very little showers. So I tell you, it gave me an appreciation for showers. I will never go a day without taking a shower.
Right. I'm assuming it must have given you appreciation for all the other duties, all the other locations you were at when you're in the Navy. I mean, it must have been stressful, and you must have felt that.
Yeah. It's always one of those things, like any type of leadership position, when you've gone through that, something intense, it just gives a greater awareness of, like, this is what the military's job is to do. Some people might join the military and have a different job where they don't see combat, but they're still supporting at some point missiles going downrange, bullets going downrange. Like the main job of the military is to win wars, and there's no getting around that. That's my opinion, as you said.
So could you kind of go over again? You introduced yourself and mentioned many of the therapies that mm-hmm. You've had the benefit of over the last many years. And so tell us, how did you get into a position where you needed all these, needed the treatments that you did receive? And tell us about that.
There's a couple parts to that. There in 2018, I was in severe depression after the divorce, and my kids leaving. And that led to one suicide attempt. And then, when I got out of the Navy,
Maybe we go back a minute, because mm-hmm. now you were single when you went into the service, and mm-hmm. you met your wife. Where did you meet her?
We met in the service. She was a Marine.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So was she stationed near you?
Yeah, we were in the same building at the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you had a couple of children?
Two children.
So, okay. So I wanted to get back to, you know, yeah. what happened with the marriage and the children and, you know, and then you going into therapy.
So. Yeah, so the there was that suicide attempt, and the first time I went through that was the first time I actually went to therapy, and I had a great therapist. And that's when I read the book, The Body Keeps the Score, and I just looked at it as, like, let me try some breathing techniques and all these different things. Then fast forward, on my last deployment, we lost a Marine, and we weren't in combat. So it was very, but it was very horrific the way that she passed. And it was me and my team that received her. And it's like, we had just saw her that morning smiling. And then next thing you know, we're cleaning up her body. And, one of the saddest things I still think about is we pulled seashells out of her pocket. Seashells that she was collecting on the shore that morning, probably to bring home. And she was only 20, so not even old enough to drink a beer. And that moment, you know, I was the only one on my team that had been to combat, so I really held it together as much as I could for them. But when I got home, that's when the symptoms started. And then when I got out of the Navy, it was almost as if my body had gotten so used to being revved up all the time that even though it was very peaceful here, I felt like I was always getting upset or getting really strung out, really anxious, start shaking, get angry. But I don't know if this microphone is squeaking or something.
You're coming through fine.
Okay. Yeah, and even my partner at that time, you know, sometimes she would hold me while I was shaking. And that's when I just knew, you know, this medication thing isn't working. Definitely drinking isn't working. And I just knew something needed to change. And and my partner at that time, she knew a lot of people that, like, were in these different modalities, and that was really, it really served me to learn how to navigate my body and mind. And that's what Ronin Relief really stands for, is that mental health is a body, mind, soul project.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that microphone, but we'll have to deal with it one way or another. So, so where were you at that point? Were you back here when you were going through that?
Yeah, when I moved back, that's when a lot of it really got worse, which was odd because it was peaceful.
Right.
I didn't have as many things to worry about.
So, I know you had mentioned you had gone to Peru too, right?
Mm-hmm.
You did ayahuasca. How did you happen to do that?
One of the people my partner had introduced me to was a woman that did a very specific type of meditation. Should we switch microphones? She did a very specific meditation that was designed by the it's tradition in the Quechua tradition with the four directions, and after I did these meditations and I would start to feel my mind and body get better, that woman that had led these meditations suggested that I go to, that I sit with ayahuasca. And I had no idea how I was going to pay for it because it was like $5,000 or $6,000 to go to Peru. And I just prayed and I said, you know, if this is what's wanted, then let it happen. And then I found an organization that pays for veterans to go. I put my name in the lottery ticket, and a month before I was getting out, I got an email saying that it's being funded as a study for veterans with PTSD from a group in England. And if I have a passport and I'm willing to go, I can leave in August. And I was like, heck yeah.
Right.
So as soon as I got out, I'm in Peru, in the jungle, 5 ceremonies, 10 days. And that there's like life before ayahuasca, life after ayahuasca.
So that was August. So how many years ago was that?
About 3 years.
3 years ago. Yeah. So there's life before ayahuasca and life after. So tell us about your life. But well, we knew what your life was like before. So tell us about your life after ayahuasca.
I felt as though almost like it was like a full system, body, mind system reboot. Like all of a sudden, I had access to sensations in my body that I never had before. I had a way to think through problems and anxiety that I never had. I had a different sense of security that showed up. And not that my life is perfect or I don't make mistakes now or I don't get spun up, but there was a different capacity, a different love, a different empathy that showed up that was transformative. And everything after ayahuasca that I did, I met a meditation teacher right after, and it allowed me to deepen into meditation in a way I could never do before. And so it's like a different sensitivity. It's very heart-opening, seeing the world. And then everything afterwards is just a continuous integration of that experience.
Well, sounds great.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
I know that, I've had friends who've gone through that, regiment. You know, one friend had gone down to either Costa Rica or Peru, or even had done it back here in the States many times. You find this interesting because this same person goes to India and has a guru in India. You know, and so he had a private session with the guru. You know, and he had talked about his ayahuasca experience. And the guru had said, you know, I'm glad that you have experienced what you have going through ayahuasca. And that's wonderful. But I don't want you to do it anymore because, you know, you're at the point now in your life where you can more or less dictate where you go from here.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's what happened to me.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of people out there that, like, they sit with ayahuasca 100 times, but I truly felt like once I started deepening in meditation, the same experience of love and peace and calm and connection could happen with just sitting and being still with all my emotions and thoughts and sensations.
So we only have less than 10 minutes left, Nick. So I'd like to have you get into how you happened, when you began this program or opened up the program, and tell us what your goals are and the type of people you're looking for to take advantage of it, and anything relating to the program when did you decide you wanted to do this?
The thought came to me last year, and I would say this is the, came to me last year, and I started getting it running, and then I encountered severe neck and shoulder pain. Like, I couldn't move my shoulders or neck, and spent months with chiropractic and cupping and massage therapy, and rehabilitated myself so that I could do a mile and a half ocean swim race. And that has inspired me to go further now, because it's a testament to not only do these things work to relieve the pain, but they work to bring back almost back to where I started. Like, it's a rehabilitation. There's mindfulness. There's a different mindset around the physical activities I do. But that's really who I want to serve people, veterans that have maybe gone through combat or have a PTSD diagnosis or have musculoskeletal pain. And they're thinking, how can I actually get better? And one of the ways that I really want to demonstrate this is I want to do a documentary that tracks this from healing to what I call healing to Iron Man, Operation Iron Resilience, where it's shown to be possible that we can get back to where we once were, but with a deeper sense of wholeness. So any veteran that needs support right now, my focus, as I'm still building funding, is educating and supporting them to get access and maybe do free coaching, free sessions, stuff like that. And as it grows, my intention is really to affect real change for the VA, where these things would be paid for. Because right now, some things are paid for. I think acupuncture is paid for, chiropractic, but you only get 12 sessions, and they still try to hand you medication. And there's so much more that I've encountered that's possible. It's a lot more work, a lot more intention, but I feel more whole and complete today just by being willing to experience and walk through these things day by day.
Well, then that is great. That is great, Nick. And, I mean, you're a testimonial as to the individual therapies that you're mm-hmm. going to be able to offer in your nonprofit. And we have to hook you up with Veterans for Common Sense right here in Sarasota.
It's, yeah.
We work very closely with them, and they would be a great contact.
I would love that, yeah.
And I'm just trying to think of anything else we'd like to have you get into with the next 2 or 3 minutes we have before we finish up, as we finish up. The suicide rate with veterans is just astronomical. It's in a lot of, well, I wasn't even thinking of the fact that you attempted suicide.
Yeah.
So you can speak to that when you speak to veterans who have been through that process and somehow work their way through it. So,
and although I haven't attempted again since being out, I've had some dark days. And when my personal experience with this, it's like if my body's in pain, so I can't even move the way I used to, if my brain's not working the way it used to get things moving, if I'm anxious and I'm pushing away people I love through destructive behaviors because I'm just so in pain and I don't have any way to handle it, of course that becomes the only solution at a certain point. And thankfully, I cultivated a core group of friends where I could call and just say, hey, I need to talk. And they know what I mean. So they're not calling the white coats on me, but they know that I just need to vent, talk about anything else. And sometimes I just need to cry or whatever, or just feel it. But yeah, after being out, when I was in the military, I didn't quite understand it, like why the suicide rate was so high. And now I get it. I came from like top of my game to now either start your own business or you work for $20 an hour. And it's very strange, and not everyone understands. And even romantic relationships may not understand why I'm hypervigilant in a parking lot versus someone else that's never been through that. So it really is about connection, getting access to these things, getting access to tools that shows one other way out, or at least 5 other ways out besides let me end this all right now.
Right. Well, in the last minute or so that we have, Nick, I'd like to have you let the audience know your website and mm-hmm. any other information you want to let them know, how to get in touch with you. Mm-hmm. So why don't you go ahead and do that?
Well, I have Instagram, which is Ronan Relief. My personal one is Nick Ronan Perez. There's RonanRelief.com.
So it's Ronan, RonanRelief.
Yes.
.com. Ronan Relief.
Yeah. And you can message me on any of those platforms if you want to get in touch with me on the website and on my Instagram. If you feel called to donate, we're still building, so any amount helps. If you have anyone that you're connected to that wants to partner, please reach out and let me know. Or if you just want to talk, if you're a veteran and you're like, I need someone to talk to and something about what I said today has spoken to you, please reach out because no one should walk this alone.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Nick, for coming in today. I really wish you the best, and we'll have to have you back later in the year, or the first of the year, to see how things are going and give a report.
And maybe we'll see each other at the community events, too.
Well, very good, Nick. What I'm going to do is I'm going to play some music here while I get ready for the second guest. Hold on for a minute or two, Nick.
White supremacist or America first. I think the bus sell merch. The whole place feels a little bit cursed. It's like somebody else might have been living here first. Incels and sellers from a long line of failures underneath rumble umbrellas, daily wiring with the fellas. Chrome mag hate cave dwellers. The tale is older than the tellers. The tale is older than old Yeller. The internet is incarnate, manifested, given birth. There's some spillage in a village not far from where I'm living here on Earth. It's a disgrace to the natural stage. There ain't much that ain't. Hey, Bill. Hey, Billy. Hey, Sarah. Hey, Tom. Hey, Mike. Everything is constantly unlike anything you've ever seen before. Everything is greater than it's ever been before. Pardon the progress. Hate is part of the process. Catastrophic nostalgia. And delusions of freedom. I think we ate the last apple in the Garden of Eden. All the masks are off and they don't even try. They know that you know that they know and they don't even mind it. All the masks are off and they're getting lazy. They think you're so damn stupid. They think you're so damn crazy. Killing people from a distance in an instant at the insistence of a president with a black male gun to his head for the fun that he had in the dark ages. Pages and pages and pages and pages. They thought they'd get away with it. The minimum wage is outrage with it. Gonna burn someone at the stake for a fruit of the doom. Oranges and grapes. Hold on to your vapes, kids. Icicles and alligators and blood traitors and purveyors of strange behaviors and masqueraders and masked invaders and layers and layers and layers. Be good to your God and be good to your bear. Take your aspirin and your Roundup and say all of your prayers. All the masks are off and they don't even try. They know that you know that they know and they don't even mind it. All the masks are off and they're getting lazy. They think you're so damn stupid. They think you're so damn crazy. His act is boiling and festering and stabbing itself in the back. Who here is surprised by that? Who here is blown aghast? If you want to know the future, simply look into the past. All the masks are off and they don't even try. They know that you know that they know and they don't even mind it. All the masks are off and they're getting lazy. They think you're so damn stupid. They think you're so damn crazy.
That was Jesse Wells. The masks are off. And I have a special guest on the phone. Let me see if he's coming through. Bruce, can you hear me? Well, Bruce, can you hear me? Well, I guess Bruce cannot hear me, but we will try to figure that out momentarily. Hello, Bruce. Are you there? All right. Let's get back to Jesse Wells here for just a minute. And this title of this song is Everything Must Die.
what they do to people like you. Everyone is standing round, they love to bring you down. Everything must die. It does you no good to scream at the sky. Everything must die. And I'm gonna miss it, but I'm gonna kiss it bye. How does it feel to be clean? To know in your heart, to mean what you be. How does it feel to believe? To know it for certain, the things you can't see. Don't you know what they say about all the ways you must go? Don't you know what they do to people like you? Give an inch, they take a mile. Life will only last a while. Everything must die. It does you no good to scream at the sky. Everything must die. And I'm gonna miss it, but I'm gonna kiss it bye.
Hello?
You hear me? Okay, I think we're all set.
I hear you.
You hear? Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you. And I just want to let the listeners know we're speaking with Bruce Gagnon. And let me tell you a little bit about Bruce. You probably know Bruce because he's been on the show several times over the year. He's the coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. He was a co-founder of the Global Network when it was created in 1992, and you probably heard me interview Robert Chatterley many times. He is the Americans Who Tell the Truth founder, and one of the portraits that he's drawn is Bruce Gagnon. So Bruce Gagnon tells the truth about what's going on with foreign affairs. He's a leading peace activist. So I'm really happy you're available today, Bruce, because there's so much to talk about. So why don't we just get right into it?
Okay.
You know, let's get right into Iran. It's continuing to go on after supposedly things were slowing down. And, of course, we know Trump wanted an agreement that Iran should agree to. So why don't you tell us why things are back and why... what's going on in general?
Well, the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, that Iran did agree to, the United States immediately violated it within, like, the next day after the signing of it. Part of the deal was in the MOU that that Israel would stop bombing Lebanon. They've already created more than 1 million refugees in southern Lebanon, and so that was violated. And then additional points within the MOU were violated by the United States as well as Israel. And then the United States began saying that it was going to block the Straits of Hormuz again. You know, that's a waterway that runs right alongside of Iran. It's like an intercoastal waterway in a sense, because it's right there. It's their waterway. And now the United States presumes that it will control the Strait of Hormuz. And even Trump said yesterday that they're going to charge 20% on every ship going through there. They said Iran couldn't charge anybody, but now Trump is saying that U.S. will charge people for it when they control it. But they're not going to be able to pull this off. You know, Iran's crime, if you will, is that they're the only country that has stood up against Israel and the United States as this genocide has been going on in Palestine for the last couple of years. You know, some countries will speak out against it, but nobody really ever does anything to stop Israel and the U.S. that has been supplying intelligence, supplying weapons to Israel, supplying satellite surveillance technology that allows for targeting, all those kind of things. U.S. is intimately involved in the genocide in Palestine. And so Iran is the only one that's actually stepped up and done anything about it to try to stop it. And that's their crime. And they have to be shackled and handcuffed and broken down. You know, this war started with the U.S. and Israel bombing the leadership, the supreme leader, and other members of his family, his daughter-in-law, his grandchild, other leaders of Iranian government were all killed in this attempt by the United States to take out the leadership at the very first day, at the same time that the U.S. bombed that school, Manab, and killed, I forgot the exact number, but 150, 200 students, young girls, at this school. So the United States is a genocidal freak, and Iran is trying to stand up to them, and I honor that.
Now, what I had read when this all began was that Iran has not invaded a country in 300 years, and also that the supreme leader had no interest whatsoever in a nuclear weapon. It was against their religion.
Now, they've been renouncing nuclear weapons for years, but this shows the lies of the United States and its allies that they keep saying they're building a nuclear weapon. Now, what Iran is trying to do is build a nuclear power economy, both for medical purposes and for electricity, because they realize that oil will eventually run out someday, and it's their primary source of income. So they're trying to build a nuclear power economy so that they can extend the life of their oil, essentially, as their chief income source. I'm not a big fan of nuclear power, but I think they have the right to make that own decision. That's an internal decision for them. But the United States flips it and says, no, they're building nuclear weapons, and it's all a lie. And the reason why they do that is because Trump wants to come up with some reason to attack them, to take them out. And why do they want to take them out? Because, again, they challenge Israel and they challenge the United States.
And it's true that, Bibi Netanyahu was celebrating because he said, I've been trying to get this to happen for 40 years, and no U.S. president would go along with him. And then along comes Trump. And right when this happened, there was a State of the Union before this even began, the State of the Union address back in the end of January or February, whenever it was. And one of the YouTube podcast that I pull up, it was showing that when Trump said that we cannot allow Iran to get a nuclear weapon, and she made a point of this, all the Democrats were standing up and cheering with the Republicans, and so, oh yeah, he's right on this one, we got his back. So the Democrats, Republicans, it doesn't matter.
Well, AIPAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee that funds most of the campaigns of American politicians. Here in our state of Maine, Susan Collins, a Republican that's running for re-election, a lot of national coverage of that race now, she's been funded by AIPAC for years, like most other politicians in the country, and they have to do what Israel wants. And Israel wants leave us alone. Let us kill everybody in Gaza that we want to kill. Don't say anything. Don't do anything about it. Keep sending us weapons. Keep sending us money. And that's what the Congress does. Now, we want you to have a war with Iran. Take out Iran. You know, it's part of greater Israel. Israel wants to expand into Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, Iran, other countries. Israel wants to grow. It wants to be a massive regional player. And so they need money. They need weapons for war to take hold of other countries. So Congress does that, as they're told, Republicans and Democrats, as you just said. That's the problem with our country, is that it's not really our country anymore. And in fact, now they're trying to push a bill through Congress that would unify the U.S. military and the Israeli military, make them one, make them one. Israel would be in on everything that the Pentagon does, every decision, every war, every whatever. Israel would be part of the decision-making on that process. Well, that's basically handing over the sovereignty of your nation to another nation, giving Israel the power to dictate what the United States should do with taxpayer money, how many wars we should start, and everything else. It's out of control. Israel's out of control, and AIPAC is out of control. And the American people appear to be fine with that. I don't know why.
Well, supposedly, I don't know, I've read a few places and heard it with a few people on the Internet, but those are the people who were against Israel anyway, that the tide is turning just a little bit as far as the American people are concerned. The big test will be whether, you know, up in Maine where you are, whether or not Susan Collins is reelected or not. And one thing that I just read yesterday, well, I heard it yesterday, that the bill that was passed to give ICE more money, it was some astronomical amount of money. I don't know, $30 billion? It was outrageous. And I say $30 billion for ICE, and we can't afford to feed people here or get the homeless off the streets or
yep.
I mean, it's mind-boggling that Trump cannot do it without Congress approving it. That's the disgusting thing. So
we have hospitals in Maine closing down. We have people increasingly growing unemployment. Our roads, our bridges are falling apart. You should see the potholes in the roads here up in Maine, you know, because of the winters, the freezing and thawing, the roads begin to expand and contract, and they develop a lot of potholes, and they don't have the money to fix them all. I mean, it's a mess. And where is all that money going? Well, we know where it's going. $1.5 trillion a year for the Pentagon, and now Trump is saying he needs another $500 billion more to replace all the weapons that they've been using in this war with Iran and all the weapons that they've given to Ukraine for their war against Russia. So, I mean, it's just amazing. We've become a police state, let's face it. That's the reality. You know, I'm reminded that Benito Mussolini, Italy's fascist dictator during World War II, once said that the fascism was defined as the wedding of corporations and government. Well, isn't that what we have in America today? Isn't our government run by corporate power? Blackwater, you know, all these other big corporate bodies, they're running the country today.
Right.
And what's the other one I'm trying to think of? The other big corporate monster Vanguard, BlackRock and Vanguard, and then followed by many other investment management corporations. And they're buying up housing. So you go try to rent a house anymore, and it's often owned by these big investment corporations. They're buying up the whole country. It's getting worse by the day.
Well, let's get to Russia and Ukraine? And where does that stand at this point in time?
Well, Ukraine is being flooded with drones by NATO countries. Germany has just announced that they're sending 50,000 drones to Ukraine. It should be remembered that when Zelensky ran for president, the reason why he got elected was because his number one issue was that he was going to stop the war. But then once he got into power, he learned that the people that really run the country are the Nazis who predominate in western Ukraine over by the Polish border after the U.S. orchestrated coup d'etat during the Biden administration. In 2014, they installed Nazis at the head of security, surveillance, like their version of the CIA, police organizations, all those kind of agencies were all flooded with Nazi operatives. And so they took over the country. And I saw a video one time. Zelensky went to the war zone early on, soon after he was elected, and wearing a helmet that was much too big for his head. And he was threatened by Nazis, saying, if you stop this war, we will kill you. And that was it was on a video. And so that's ever since he's been a cheerleader for war. And his job is to go around the world with his hand out, his gold cup, begging for more money, more weapons, and everything else. Now, why do they want war with Russia? Well, one day I thought, let me just see, how many times has Russia been invaded over the years? So I just searched on the Internet that question. 500 years, Russia has been repeatedly invaded, 13 times by Sweden, invaded by Napoleon, invaded by Hitler, and other countries as well over the years. Just about every 100 years, a big war against Russia. And why do they do that? Because Russia has the largest border with the Arctic, and as the Arctic ice melts due to climate change, now you can get up there and drill, baby, drill in that region. And the resource extraction corporations want that territory. So their theory is, if we can break Russia up into smaller countries, like that's what happened to Yugoslavia, during the Clinton administration. They broke Yugoslavia up into smaller countries, and Yugoslavia was a communist country, and then so they ended that, and then they broke it up, and U.S. and European NATO allies took control of most of those countries once they broke Yugoslavia up. So they want to do the same thing to Russia. Russia also has major resources throughout its large country. So that's the agenda. That's really what this war is all about. And so Russia is trying to defend the Donbass region. I've been there a couple times. And the Donbass region is on the eastern border, right along the Russian border with Ukraine. These are Russian ethnics that live there. And after the U.S. orchestrated coup in 2014 that I referred to a moment ago, these Nazis were sent in to attack the Russian ethnics along the border with Russia. So they came from the western side, where, again, these Nazis predominate, and they came to the eastern part of the country along the Russian border and began killing more than 30,000 Russian ethnics and wounding many tens of thousands more over a period of from 2014 to 2022. In 2022, Russia finally, that's when they went into Ukraine to try to push these Nazi-led forces out. Nazi-led forces that were trained, armed, directed by the U.S., by the CIA, by NATO. And that's the story of the Russian war with Ukraine. And it's not going to end until the U.S. and its NATO allies stop funding the Zelensky war machine, because without it, the war would end tomorrow.
Yeah, we have it's Gaza, it's Israel, it's Ukraine, it's spend the money on ICE, spend it everywhere, but where we actually need it, here in the United States. So,
yeah, well, you know, the voices of the American people have to get a lot louder when it comes to worrying about our children and grandchildren's future, you know, whether it's education, whether it's health care, whether it's the environment, being able to breathe the air, to deal with the growing temperature rise around the planet. I mean, you can't deny it anymore. The Earth is heating up because of the way we humans are living. We're pumping so many toxins and everything into the atmosphere. The ozone layer is depleting, and we're frying down here on Earth. I look out the window here and at my apartment in Maine, I see the lawn outside, and it's mostly brown. I've never seen in all the years I've lived here the grass so brown, because we've hardly had any rain this year. Usually Maine gets a lot of rain, and the grass is green, but it's all dying out there because it's been a heat wave all summer so far.
Well, Bruce, we have another 2 or 3 minutes left. Is there anything you'd like to bring up that, other than what we've talked about so far?
Well, you know, my chief work is trying to prevent the arms race from moving into space. Trump wants a golden dome, a so-called missile shield, over the top of the U.S., and then he said, well, we'll put it over Canada, and then he said, well, we'll put it over Europe as well. This is a boondoggle for the weapons corporations. The cost estimates coming out of congressional studies are saying that it would cost tens of trillions of dollars to put up this whole thing. And then the American Physics Society says it'll never work, that the thing is a boondoggle, and that it would not work because of technical realities. So it's just a stealing of the nation's treasury. I call our government pirates, and there's a buried treasure, which is the U.S., you know, treasury, and the pirates are trying to grab the treasure chest and steal it from the American people. And that's where we are right now, and if we don't fight together to stop these people, these oligarchs, these rich people, these elites that run Wall Street, and they want to take over the whole world, if we don't stop them, we're in big trouble.
Yeah, we need permanent rallies in Washington, D.C. with tens of thousands of people day in and day out, and leading to millions of people like they had. Can you believe how many people were in the streets of Iran?
Yeah, you know, I put on my blog yesterday, I urge people to check out my blog. It's called Organizing Notes, N-O-T-E-S, Organizing Notes, and the address is space, the number 4, peace, space4peace.blogspot.com, space4peace.blogspot.com. But anyway, yesterday on my blog I put a little short video of people in one Iranian city out at night protesting against what Israel and the U.S. is doing, and they said that it's been every single night all over the country for 136 days. Now, that was 2 days ago that I found that number, so it's about 138 days in a row now. Imagine me trying to get people in my town to come out on the streets and protest for 138 days in a row. It'd be an impossibility.
I know.
Why are they doing that in Iran? Because they can see the writing on the wall. They see that their country is being attacked. They can see that the United States and Israel want to destroy their country, that, as you said, hasn't invaded anybody in 300 years. They've been invaded by Iraq some years ago in the 90s.